Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have back as my guest Dr. Susan Shumsky. Today we're going to be discussing her book, Ascension. If you look in the archives, you can see the previous interviews we've done with Susan. She is a spirituality expert, a New Thought minister, and doctor of divinity. And we're here today to talk about ascension, which is a very timely topic, as many believe we're in the process now of a planetary ascension. Welcome, Susan. Thanks for joining us.
I'm thrilled to be here with you today, Dr. Susan.
So, would you like to give the audience a little bit about your background and maybe mention your contact information?
Well, I've been practicing spiritual disciplines for over 50 years, and I've taught meditation for, well, basically all of those years. Meditation and intuition and prayer, affirmation, and other spiritual disciplines. I spent 22 years in an ashram. That's a place you go to study with a master from India, a spiritual master. Spent 22 years in the ashram of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was the guru of the Beatles and the guru of Deepak Chopra. And I spent 6 years on his personal staff. That was a long time ago. And I've founded something called Divine Revelation, which is about learning how to listen to the still small voice within. And I have 14 books in print. My contact information is drsusan.org. My main website is drsusan.org, and then I have another website, divinetravels.com. That's T-R-A-V-E-L-S, divine, D-I-V-I-N-E-T-R-A-V-E-L-S.com. And that's a travel website where I take people on tours and retreats and cruise ship seminars to sacred destinations.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is. Fun, yeah.
Oh, great.
Lots of fun.
So a lot of people have been talking about ascension lately, and there's different ideas about what ascension is. Would you like to maybe fill us in on what you've learned about ascension?
Well, now is the Christmas season, so it's appropriate for us to be talking about a topic that generally when people think of the word ascension, they think of Jesus and other ascended masters. So What is an ascended master? That is someone who has transformed their physical body into a light body. In other words, it is possible for a human being to transform their physical body into light. In other words, to make the body more refined, more subtle, and eventually to turn that gross physical body into a light body, and then to, traditionally, the idea is disappear in a flash of light. So, for example, there's tens of thousands of Buddhist monks and nuns who, it's believed, have attained what they call the rainbow body, which is another term for ascension, which they go into a hut. When they're ready to ascend, they go into a hut, and they just stay in that hut. And then eventually, people see light above the hut. They see a flash of light. And when they go into the hut later, they don't find a human being there anymore. The person has transformed into a light being, into a light body. Similarly, Jesus, after he was taken off the cross and put into a tomb, and the stone was rolled over the tomb, and then 3 days had gone by, and there were guards guarding the tomb. But then when they rolled the stone back, they didn't find anything except for what I believe that they found, the Shroud of Turin, which is his shroud, which had, very strangely, kind of a photographic impression on it, which I believe took place because of the flash of light when he disappeared and became an ascended master. So these are just a couple instances. In fact, my book Ascension has dozens and dozens of stories of people who have ascended throughout the world, not just the usual suspects like Jesus and Saint Germain and other ascended masters, Elijah and other ascended masters that we consider, but ones you wouldn't expect in places all over the world, including the United States.
So there's a book called Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East that talks about, I guess, the plane of existence where these masters live. And you talked in your books about that there's an area above Mount Shasta, or vibrationally above Mount Shasta, and then the Great Tetons, where the ascended masters live. So there's probably an area where they're not really in spirit, because in spirit they can do any. Spirit's a little bit different. It's a little bit different dimensionally, but there may actually be a higher vibrational plane of existence where these ascended masters exist. Is that something that you can comment on?
Yes, they exist on a plane that's different from this physical plane. They exist
right.
in the subtler plane of existence, which you might call the spiritual plane or the spiritual world, or some people call it heaven. You know, there's many different names for the place where ascended masters dwell. But the interesting thing about ascended masters is that they can take on a physical form and appear to anyone at any time in any shape.
Right.
So they could come and visit you, for example, as a homeless person on the street, come up to you and give you a message, give you wisdom, or they could even appear as a child, as a dog, as an animal. They can appear in any form. And that being might be Jesus or Saint Germain or one of the other beautiful ascended masters. And it's as if an angel has come to visit us. And it can be an ascended master visitation. It's called a visitation. And I've had several visitations personally. And I believe that your listeners have too. If you've ever had somebody just walk up to you in the middle of nowhere and just start talking to you, and suddenly they tell you something that's so profound and so meaningful, and it changes your life. And
that's a visitation, yeah.
Yeah, or they could be saving you. You might be in danger, and they just come, and all of a sudden they help you. They just come out of the blue, and they just suddenly help you. It could be a human being, but then it could also be an ascended master.
Right. And they tend to come in for a short period of time. They don't stay here. They're, you know, they kind of beam in and then beam out. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's right. They do.
Yeah, we had an experience. We had a meditation group years ago, and we were being taught by Rabbi Zartaris of that group of spiritual masters. And several of the members of the group, not me, but I think three or four of the members, were meditating separately and asked Rabbi Zartaris to appear. And he did, but he was very unhappy because he says, "You should not summon me like this. It's not appropriate." So he kind of scolded them, and then he left. So
there's a
that was a little lesson of, just don't summon me for your own, whatever.
Yeah, there's a very similar story in the book Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, where Yogananda summons Babaji, who is an incredible ascended master living in the Himalayas. And so he summoned him in order to prove to some friends that he had been in communication with Babaji.
Right,
and so,
that's not appropriate.
For his own ego, he summoned him. And
that's
so,
right, yeah.
Babaji definitely scolded him for doing that. However,
there's
absolutely nothing wrong in calling upon ascended masters anytime you need help with anything.
Right, just
not to prove to your
friend something.
Yes,
right.
Yes, but for any other purpose, in case you need help, in case you need a comfort, in case you need prayers answered, for just about any reason, That's what they're here for, is to help us, to guide us,
right,
show us the way. Do not hesitate to call upon them, to ask them questions, to help you in your everyday affairs. You know, if you want the answer to any question that will mm-hmm. help you to live your true purpose, that will help you in your everyday life, absolutely call upon Ascended Masters by name, and they will come, and they will assist mm-hmm. you. They'll give you guidance, wisdom, inspiration, healing, anything that you ask for. That's what they're here to help us with.
And sometimes if you've got certain problems, even if they seem very superficial, mm-hmm. what I'm learning is that a lot of times these are opportunities for you to drop limiting belief systems.
Absolutely.
It's very interesting that I thought I had a problem with something that, and then I was given, no, this is not a problem. This is an opportunity for you to learn how to do something that you mm-hmm. need to learn. You know, it's not really a problem. It's just a
right.
opportunity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting.
Absolutely.
So asking for guidance about why do I have this particular issue? You know,
exactly.
it occurred three mm-hmm. times, and the third time I'm thinking to myself, well, why is this happening? You know, and then
exactly.
this morning mm-hmm. I was given some guidance on what, you know, what to do about it. You know,
exactly.
what the whole thing was about. Yeah. Was
mm-hmm.
what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Everything that I teach is based upon one principle, and that is ask and it shall be given unto you.
Right.
So by asking, you will receive the guidance. You'll receive wisdom. You'll receive mm-hmm. healing. You'll receive inspiration. You'll receive creative ideas for a project.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is that you want to ask for, you will receive. There's only one caveat, and that is that I absolutely do not recommend that you ask fortune-telling questions, that you try to ask fortune-telling questions to mm-hmm. ascended beings or to any light beings or deities
right.
that you're in contact with. And there's a really good reason not to ask fortune-telling questions. And the reason is that when you ask a fortune-telling question, and a fortune-telling question starts like this, it goes, will I, will he, will she, will this happen, when will this happen?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Those kinds of questions are fortune-telling questions. And I really caution against doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because when you ask a fortune-telling question, what you're saying to the universe is, I don't have any power. My life is
right,
determined
yeah.
for me, and I don't have free will. So that's not a good mm-hmm. message for you to put into the universe, because it weakens
right.
you, and you will not be able to talk to ascended masters on that basis. They won't answer fortune-telling questions. So
mm-hmm.
what you're going to do is draw in lower energy to answer those
mm-hmm.
kinds of questions, and that lowers your vibration, and it's just not a healthy thing. So
mm-hmm.
I never do that, you know, and I don't go to psychics. I don't try to find
mm-hmm.
out, ascertain the future or anything like that. But sometimes ascended masters will give you prophecy. They'll just out of the blue
right.
volunteer information.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you ask them a question, for example, is it wise for me to take this plane at this particular time? And they say no, then it's a good idea for you to listen and follow your inner
right.
guidance, because
yeah.
there may be some danger, or it may be delayed, or, you know, you don't know what might happen, but they do
mm-hmm.
see into the future, and they can tell. That's why they might give you warnings, for example, if you ask a question about doing something.
Right, yeah. But that is different than asking what's going to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, in your book, you talk about the major, and what I was given in meditation, is this is really, there's only one sin, and sin is the ancient Aramaic, an archery term, to miss the mark. So the main reason we miss the mark is that we believe that we're separate from God, and then all other sins come out of that. So, and that's in your book, too. When you talk about the original thought that separated us from God, saying that we are separate from God, that thought
mm-hmm.
then caused a cascade of all sorts of other thoughts that led to this lower vibrational world that we live in.
That's absolutely true. And people in the East, they say that this world is created through what they call Maya. And Maya is usually translated as illusion because of that. But in fact, the word Maya means to measure. And the reason
to judge.
Well, actually, it means to measure. Maya means measure. It's a Sanskrit word meaning measure. So when you try to measure the infinite, that means you're limiting the infinite. And in India, there are different ways of measuring the infinite. And in fact, this is also in not only in the Eastern philosophy, not only in India that they believe in this idea of Maya, but also in Kabbalah. In fact, they talk about limiting the absolute, limiting the what they call the Ein Sof, which is the absolute or the oneness. So when you try to limit that, for example, one way of limiting, there's several ways to limit the infinite. One of the ways is limiting, for example, unbounded space, unboundedness, limitless space. And when you limit it, when you limit that unboundedness, that's called space. When you limit unbounded omnipotence, for example, omnipotence, which is absolute all-powerfulness, that's called power. So in other words, you're limiting the eternity, for example, the limit of eternity is called time. And the limit of unboundedness is called space. So what we're doing is we're limiting the idea that all is one, that all is eternal, and that's how we limit the absolute, pure consciousness, unbounded awareness. So that is what creates the world. That's what creates duality.
Time and space. Yeah, time and space are constructs. Constructs being ideas that are limiting beliefs. So, and it's interesting because the different levels of existence, I mean, this isn't the only level of existence. It's one of many. But the higher levels of existence that still are not unbounded have less laws of physics at work. Isn't that interesting? Like the laws of physics in this dimension are a certain amount, but then in the fourth dimension or fifth dimension, you know, which I still am a little not understanding completely, but my understanding from the Ascended Masters is that the laws of physics in the higher dimensions, there's less laws, which means they're less bounded. And then finally, when you get into eternity, where there is no time and space, where there is no limits, then presumably there may not be any laws of physics, you know, because laws are limiting beliefs, right? Yeah.
That's correct. You hit the nail absolutely on the head there, yes.
Yeah. So this world ascension that we're in the process of going through, it's a planetary ascension. It's one that is, I mean, it's different than an individual ascension, which so far we've had individual ascensions you describe in your book and what you described earlier. But a planetary ascension may be very, very different, but most religions in the world have referenced a planetary ascension. So what do you think is different about that?
Well, planetary ascension, in my definition, may not be the same as the quote-unquote New Age definition. I've noticed over the last 60 years that this planet has transformed tremendously, that it is less dense. And what I'm speaking of, I'm not speaking about the, you know, the ground, the earth, the physical things around us. What I'm talking about is humanity's collective consciousness has transformed, has become much, much more spiritual, more spiritualized, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can't even recognize. I mean, if you've been on Earth as long as I have, which I'm 69 years old, when I was a child, it was a completely different world. There was so much tension in the atmosphere that's not there now. The thought forms, the collective thought forms of humanity now have become so much higher, so much more refined. And I know a lot of people will argue with me about this, but I see the evidence everywhere. For example, you can see the evidence in how the world has changed. When I was a child, you'd go to the grocery store, and what would you find? Well, you'd find frozen vegetables and canned vegetables, and you'd find the only things that would be fresh would be like tomatoes and oranges and apples and meat and so on. Now you have an abundance of wonderful foods when you go to the market, you know, every possible type of vegetable and all kinds of healthy foods and organic foods that didn't exist back then. It used to be you would not find, there was no esoteric books. There were two esoteric bookstores in the country, one in L.A. and one in New York. And now mm-hmm. what you find in every bookstore is a proliferation right. of esoteric and metaphysical information, and you actually just have to go to your computer and find it on the internet. There's tons and tons and tons of knowledge that was mm-hmm. never available to anyone.
Back then that stuff was, you know, you had to join secret societies, and there were even
exactly.
threats of death if you revealed any of it, which, you know,
well,
the Masons.
Centuries
the,
ago, yeah.
yeah.
But,
yeah.
But I'm talking about when I was a child, it just didn't exist. And the word yoga didn't exist. You know, you couldn't
mm-hmm.
find.
Right.
There was no martial arts. You know, there was no. Now you find martial arts and yoga on every street corner. You know, it's a completely
yeah.
different world. And people are mm-hmm. talking about all these esoteric subjects, and it's very mainstream, and it's in all the bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one example of how this world has changed. But also, you know, people think that the world is, you know, that is going to hell, and there's horrible things going on in this world. Are you kidding me? Look at World War II. I mean, millions of people were killed. Here we have
yeah, or even World War I, which was even more.
Yeah.
Horrible to fight
civil,
with all the chemicals.
Civil war.
Yeah.
Civil war.
Yeah.
I mean, these wars, they don't exist anymore. We don't have wars like that anymore. We have a few people that get killed because of various incidents here and there, terrorist incidents or whatever. It's nothing,
mm-hmm.
nothing compared to what went on in the 20th century. And people
mm-hmm.
will sit there and argue with me about it. But, hey, look at the facts.
Yeah.
Look at the facts. The world has transformed. The world has ascended to a much higher vibration now. And
mm-hmm.
people, you know, are not. Look at even today in today's news, how women are standing up to sexual predators, what they never did
right.
before. This
right.
is another sign that of higher mm-hmm. vibration on the planet.
The idea of ascension, though, is a vibrational one, and you describe it in your book in many different manners, and it is, like you say, somebody goes into a hut, they're in a physical body, there's a flash of light, the body's no longer there in the physical, and so some sort of vibrational increase has occurred. Now, the
mm-hmm.
planet itself right now, for years, was at a single rate of vibration. I think it was around 7.86 or something, hertz, something like that. But now the planetary vibration is much higher. And so I think this is scientific evidence that the planet is ascending.
Yeah, I mean, we could argue that. And I believe that the planet is in a higher vibration. I mean, I just see the evidence. That's the only thing I can go with. I'm not a scientist. I've never done an experiment in my life.
Well, the people that look at this, like the HeartMath Institute and the other spiritual scientists that are looking on this, are saying that the vibrational rate of the planet is way higher now, above 100. So
well,
that would
cool.
be scientific evidence of the ascension itself of the planet. And then, of course, because we're on the planet, our vibration has to be ascending with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it because of the law of, when you're close to something that's vibrating at a certain rate, if it's lower than yours, then your vibration lowers. If it's higher, then your vibration becomes higher, which is what a lot of the meditations in your book create, higher vibrations through the meditation.
Right.
That's
exactly.
the purpose of the meditation. Yeah.
Exactly.
So it
yeah.
becomes vibrational in its basic sense. And I'm just,
absolutely.
I'm excited that I think that the negative aspects that we do see, the great division between people and the great division between, the rich and the poor and the division between men and women, even with this new thing coming out, what might be wiped out with a more sudden ascension. Because ascension tends to be sudden, like you say, the flash of light, and then all of a sudden you're in a higher dimensional area. So if it's a planetary ascension, then that might be the same thing. It might be kind of sudden.
There's an argument about that. In fact, the idea of going through what they call phase transition, which in science is a sudden change to a different state, like, for example, absolute zero Kelvin, or the state of superfluidity, superconductivity, if you happen to understand any of these principles, you see a what they call phase transition in physics, and that has often been likened to a planetary shift.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've gone through several of these planetary shifts already, and I think we will continue to go through them. And and I don't know what the future is going to look like, but I believe it's going to be, since it's been getting better and better and better and in my lifetime, I can't see any other direction. It just seems to be going into a higher dimension, higher direction.
So why don't you talk a little bit about some of the advice that the different spiritual ascended masters and masters who were in the physical have given us about ascension? What are they saying about it, and what do they recommend?
Well, many of the ascended masters, what they've done is they've talked about their own experience of ascension. For example, Ramalinga Swami would be one example. He lived in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And even as a child, he would be giving wonderful talks and advice to people in the temples of India, in South India. And he talked about creating a golden body and a bliss body and all these different bodies, which he transformed his physical body into. And he was a very great saint. He was very charitable. He had a hospital and did good works, charitable works for people. And I visited his ashram, actually, when I was in South India one time. And the story about him is that he went into a small hut and, well, first of all, he told his disciples that he was going to be ascending, that, that his work was done. He was going to ascend. So he went into this hut. They call it the Mansion of the Miracle, quote unquote, went into a hut, and he told his disciples to pray all night long and to keep the light burning, light outside the hut, to keep that burning forever and never let it go out. And he said that when they looked in the morning that he would be gone. So he went mm-hmm. into this little hut, and there was no egress other than the one door. He told them to lock the door from the outside and keep watch all night. Keep praying and keep watch. So he went in there, and then sometime in the middle of the night, there was this violet flash of light from under the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next morning, they opened up the door. And sure enough, mm-hmm. he was gone. He had vanished. And so the police did an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was there in South India, in this place called Vadalur, which is where the hut is, when the police investigated, they concluded that he had vanished into thin air. Only mm-hmm. this could happen in India. India is the only place where this would happen, where they would declare that he had vanished into thin air.
Right.
So that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And I saw the police reports. I saw the newspaper clippings, actually. They have them on display there.
Mm-hmm.
So this happened in the 1800s. So he was a great poet, and he talked about how he had transformed himself. And, of course, we have examples of other great masters, specifically Jesus, who gave us so much information about self-empowerment and about how we could do any miracle, and it is mm-hmm. possible for us to do anything. And really his mission was to help people to realize who they really are, to realize their true self. I think a lot of Christians would disagree with me on that, but mm-hmm. I believe that that's what he was telling us, because if you read his words, if you read what he actually said, he is showing us the way to realize our true self, to
right.
become self-realized.
Not to worship him, but to...
Correct.
But to be like, to follow the path that he showed us, not
exactly.
to worship him. I agree. I don't
exactly.
think Jesus was interested in being worshipped.
No, not at all.
So what about this thing called spontaneous combustion? Because it's got some elements. I mean, you've got the transformation into a different form, but of course there's ashes there. But you've got this big burst of energy. Do you think that maybe spontaneous combustion is some form of ascension that didn't quite make it?
I don't know. I've never thought about that. That's an interesting conjecture. It's an interesting
yeah.
thought. Yeah,
I just
don't know.
You know, it's such a mystery. I read an article mm-hmm. recently on spontaneous combustion, and there's a huge amount of evidence, you know, like forensic evidence. Because, of course, when this happens, the police and everybody's involved in it, because you've got to rule out that somebody got set on fire on purpose. But
right.
But the stories are very interesting, but it's got a similar thing. Usually they're alone, although there were a couple of reports of people being near them, and then, you know, they really did observe them bursting into flames. It just is it's another mm-hmm. phenomena that really needs to be explained.
Yeah, it's a very, very odd. It's a very odd thing. I don't know.
There does not seem to be any pain involved. This is interesting. They
yeah.
never yell out in pain or anything when they combust.
That's really
weird. When they've been observed. There doesn't appear to
oh
be
gosh.
Any pain involved. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's interesting. That's what made me think it might be a form of ascension that kind of went awry, you know. Because I don't think ascension hurts, you know. It doesn't appear to
no.
be anyway.
No, it doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
Wow. Hmm. Never really thought
so
of
anyway,
that.
So anyway, maybe something to look into. but there
it
are
is.
Some reports. There are reports, you know, of what, like police reports and stuff, and forensic pathology reports that might say a little
yeah.
bit about what went on.
Hmm. Yes. Interesting topic.
It is, yeah. Now let's talk a little bit about incorruptibility, because I had this discussion with a gentleman who was an expert in scalar energy, and we've concluded that it probably is scalar energy, the same energy of spontaneous remission. And in your book, you mention this, an energy starts at the crown, goes to the feet, And then there's a, you know, there's a change as that energy goes through the body. So we're thinking that that's scalar energy. We're thinking that scalar energy is responsible for incorruptibility, which, if you want to explain that to the audience, that's the ability. Yogananda had that, and some of the saints had it, and other people who aren't saints had it, where the body does not decay.
Yes, there is a tradition in the Catholic tradition of immortal, incorruptible bodies that don't decay after death. Mm-hmm. And you did mention Yogananda. Yogananda was one. It was a very interesting case in which, after he died, the corpse remained fresh for weeks and weeks, and the mortuary guy at the Forest Lawn Cemetery, he said he's never seen anything like it, that the body just didn't decay. And so, but there are many, many cases of incorruptible saints, Saint Bernadette and others, that have lasted in a semi-fresh state for centuries in the Catholic tradition. And so we could assume that they had some kind of interesting, unknown energy in their body that helped
prevented decay
to remain fresh.
Right.
And it's an extraordinary phenomenon, actually. And I think it's probably related to ascension in some way, that the body has somehow been transformed into a subtler material that remains fresh. That's my opinion, anyway.
Right. But this energy, and it's a scalar energy. There's some very interesting, it's Tom Palladino. I don't know if you know Tom. He's done a great deal of research into scalar energy. And it's a fifth-dimensional energy, obviously, that I've got a theory as to why it cures cancer. I believe that cancer is a fourth-dimensional intrusion into the third dimension, and that when the fifth-dimensional energy enters the crown and goes to the feet, and I've actually personally seen this happen, and then some of my friends have also witnessed it, or had it happen to them. I've had all three categories. Metastatic cancer, and the energy goes in the crown of the person, goes to the feet, and by the time it hits the feet, there's no more metastatic disease. So my theory is a fifth-dimensional energy has kicked the fourth-dimensional energy, which is cancer, back into the fourth dimension, and it doesn't require time. It occurs just as the wave of energy goes through. And I was talking with Tom. I believe that the same energy is what causes incorruptibility, because it has to be a fifth-dimensional energy to do this. You see?
Yeah.
But these are all aspects of scalar energy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very
And scalar energy is unlike electromagnetic energy. Electromagnetic energy, if you send an electromagnetic signal, it takes time to get there. But with scalar energy, there is time and space don't matter. The scalar energy appears immediately. So obviously, it's coming from another. It would have to be coming from another dimension, because if it originated in this dimension, it would require time and space to get to, you know, say, you know, from here to Australia. You would be able to measure it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But scalar energy is coming from an area where you don't measure, like you said. You don't measure it at all, because it doesn't need to be measured.
Yeah.
It doesn't have it doesn't have limitations.
Mhm. Yeah. Well, I'm not an expert in scalar energy, but certainly I'm in wonder about these incorruptible corpses. In my book Ascension, I talk about several instances of these. For example, Yogananda, as I mentioned, and also St. Anthony of Padua, St. Bernadette, St. Catherine of Bologna, and St. Teresa of Avila.
Avila, yeah.
Yeah, and St. Zita. Actually, I had a whole I had much more, many, many more, but I had to. They didn't quite make the final cut of the book.
Right.
Because when I was researching the topic, I just found it so fascinating that these.
Well, it is. It is. So,
I mean,
all the miracles can be understood, but just not with our concepts of physics in this dimension. You know,
right.
It's like the laws of physics in this dimension are being violated, but if the energy is coming from a higher dimension and coming into this dimension, then it is not susceptible to the same laws of physics. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. I mean, within this dimension, if this dimension is a box, anything that occurs within this dimension has to follow the laws of physics. Okay, that's just the way it is. It's the law.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If it's coming from a higher dimension, and I think there's many levels of higher dimensions. I mean, the fifth dimensional world is probably different than the fourth dimensional world and different than the seventh dimensional world. So there's more than one level that, and we may not know what all of these levels look like, but they definitely have different laws of physics. And so when an energy from a higher dimension comes and enters the patient's crown and goes to their feet, and then all of a sudden there's no more cancer, this happened. Remember that meditation group I told you about? The person leading that thing with Rabbi Zartaris, she had had an experience at age 36. She had metastatic cancer, breast cancer, all throughout her body, and she was in the hospital about ready to go into surgery the next morning because she had a perforation, and it was causing peritonitis. And she had an energy go from her crown to her feet in the hospital room, and she woke up, and she was hungry, and then all the metastatic disease was gone. So her surgeon, she asked the surgeon to come in, and he held her hand and he said, "My dear, you've had a miracle happen," and he canceled her surgery. So it was actually at her house that Rabbi Zartaris appeared.
Wow, that's great.
So I've had, I also had it happen in this clinic. I had the same thing happen. About 40 people were praying, doing healing at once on one person. And that's a lot of energy, obviously, a lot of prayers. And then that person had that experience. So the idea is that these things do have scientific explanations. They just don't have scientific explanations with the current laws of physics. So how's that?
Yeah, that's,
but I know they're real. One other story. A friend of mine, he had spiritual hearing. There was a judge in town here that was very famous, very rich. He was purported to give $1 million a year to the Scottish Rite, which is the charitable organization for the care of children. And he got metastatic lung cancer. So my friend was his caregiver. And my friend was told to take him to Mount Perrin Church of God. And so he did. You know, he was actually paralyzed before he ever got cancer, so he was in a wheelchair. So they took him in, and then that energy went from his crown to his feet in the church, and then he had no more metastatic lung cancer in his body. So that was the third story. So, yeah.
Extraordinary.
Isn't that, so I think it happens more than people know. I mean, because of his great goodwill, in his great generosity, and you talk about the law of grace, you know, the karma can be, like, he obviously had karma because he became paralyzed earlier in life and he had to live his life in a wheelchair. That's usually karma. But then the law of grace kicked in, and when he had that metastatic cancer, he had a caregiver with spiritual hearing take him to a place that then that spontaneous remission of cancer occurred. So I think that idea of karma, the idea that you draw things to you in order to experience negativity so that you will change your negative ways toward others, can be undone by the law of grace. You know, it's kind of...
Yeah. Yeah, the law of grace overcomes the law of karma.
It does. That's a good example.
We might mention, because this is a holiday season now, that St. Nicholas of Bari, who was a Roman Catholic bishop, in Turkey, he was one of the saints that attained incorruptibility, but he also had an added feature to his incorruptibility, and that is what they call, I don't know if there's a name for it, but it has to do with some kind of substance or nectar or a fragrant curative oil that exudes from their body. And there's a couple of different cases of this, and one is the St. Nicholas case. He was always giving gifts in secret, using his family inheritance, and he became the model for Santa Claus.
Right.
So he, one legend was that he resurrected three bodies that had been slaughtered by a butcher. And mm-hmm. in another legend, that he dropped bags of gold through the window or down the chimney of a father who couldn't afford the dowry for his three unwed daughters. So at that time, one of the daughters was drying a stocking over the fire, and one bag of gold landed in her stocking. So this is why we have some of these traditions of Christmas.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
And in a church in Turkey, in a place called Myra, there are incorrupt remains of St. Nicholas that mm-hmm. used to flow with a fragrant curative substance.
Mm-hmm.
And many people received healing from this balm, from this substance.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1087, his relics were transformed to Italy in a place called Bari, where they still... Mm-hmm. To this day, they still flow with a copious healing liquid, and that is 1,700 years later. And vials of this ointment are available from the St. Nicholas Church in Bari in Italy.
Wow.
So that's
interesting.
Another interesting kind of phenomenon that has taken place. There's another monk from Lebanon called Charbel Makhlouf, who lived in the 1800s, and bright lights were seen around his grave, and they continued for 40 days afterwards. And later, his body was disinterred, and they dug him up, and he was placed in a wooden coffin in the chapel of the monastery, and there were no signs of decay whatsoever. And then this mm-hmm. oily, once again, liquid soaked mm-hmm. the body, and it overflowed so much that his clothing had to be changed twice a week. And
wow.
the soaked clothing would display miraculous healing properties. And in 1927, it was 29 years after his death, the doctors reexamined his body, and they found mm-hmm. it completely free of decay.
Wow.
It was sealed in a zinc-lined coffin, and it was placed in the monastery wall. And in mm-hmm. 1950, the oily liquid,
mm-hmm.
it began to seep through the brick that walled in
oh,
the
no.
coffin.
Wow.
And again, the body was exhumed, and no decay was found, as if he were just asleep. And the oily substance emitted by the body is still removed from the coffin periodically, and it's used for its curative properties. No.
Somebody ought to analyze what that is. You know?
I know, really.
Really?
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So,
well, we can conclude that there's many levels of dimension, of existence dimensionally, and that our third dimensional constructs of space and time are more just constructs and not to be considered real. And as the Course in Miracles says, nothing real can be threatened and nothing unreal exists. Therein lies the peace of God.
That's good. That's a good quote.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Sure. My website is drsusan.org. That's drsusan.org. Also, I have another website, divinetravels.com. That's divinetravels. That's plural on the travels, divinetravels.com. And on that website, you can attend one of our amazing cruises or tours, and retreats if they're available at the time. So visit the website on drsusan.org. You can read the first chapter of my book. You can listen to teleseminars and interviews. You can read articles and see a lot of videos also on that website. So check it out, drsusan.org. If you want to read the book Ascension, it's available at amazon.com. It's also available on my website, but I always recommend people to purchase the book on Amazon because you get them much faster and they're less expensive.
Great. Well, I really enjoyed the book. It was a great compilation of many types of different information that show patterns that I think allow us to understand ascension much better, and also the information coming from all the different saints and all the different ascended masters and then the masters in India as well, because it comes from many different cultures, many different many different disciplines, spiritual disciplines, and that's what
Absolutely.
I like to do. I like to put all of it together because I think it creates a much better picture than if you just study one path.
I agree.
Yeah,
it's
well, you
surprising.
Did in your book. That's what you did. Yeah, yeah. So
it's very
it really
surprising
does.
At how many ascended masters there are from how many different places on the planet,
right.
and some that are living in the even in the 20th century, even today,
mm-hmm.
ascended masters that are around, that are hanging around, and we're not even aware of it. So
that's
your
true.
Book really goes into all that, and it also gives you a lot of exercises and techniques and practices that you can do yourself
mm-hmm.
to begin to transform your body into a light body and
right.
to just live a fuller life, be happier and closer to spirit, closer to God.
Right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Susan. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
And we will be back next week with Temple of Health Radio Show. Kent Boxberger talking about healing your health, money, and relationships. Please join us next week.